Hey, welcome to Win the Shift, a podcast for when life and faith go off script. My name is Michael Frost. Welcome in. Here we are. First episode for 2024. It's been a while coming, hasn't it? It's obviously been a while since we finished up at the end of last year. And look, I just needed a bit of an extended break from the pod over the beginning of this year. As you may have heard if you listened to our last episode of last year, ran out of gas a little bit. And so I'm aware the break's been longer than usual for sure. And look, I know it's been longer than usual because I've started getting emails from super lovely people checking in to see if I'm okay. So that's, thank you. That's very kind. And yes, I am okay. But I just needed a bit of a breather for a bit. Didn't want to just keep the train rolling for the sake of it, but come back hopefully with some energy, with something to say and something to offer and some conversations to have. So here we go. I'm back. Good news, I hope. I'm very happy to be back talking to you. I hope you are happy to hear the tones of my voice in your ears. That sounds a bit creepy, but I didn't mean it in a creepy way. Right. What else can I tell you about what's been happening? I did have COVID for the second time a few weeks ago. Woohoo. Felt a bit like a time warp, if I'm honest, because in so many ways, I think we all just want to be like done with COVID, pretend it's not a thing anymore. Anyway, turns out still a thing. And some of you will know that the first time I got it, I had quite a few months of a bit of a tough time with headaches and brain fog and weird brain stuff. So this time I was hopeful I'd fly through it just breezily. Apparently I did not. And so still dealing a little bit with that, maybe not quite as severe as last time, but still just navigating day by day how I'm going with all of that. So anyway, just thought I'd share that with you, have a little sharing time. What else has happened for me that you may or may not be interested in? You're either the person who listens to this bit or you're just the person who skips ahead to like the little music bit and gets to the real stuff, you know. But don't do that because my intro will have all sorts of great tidbits. Tidbits or tidbits? I think it's tidbits anyway. What else can I tell you? So yes, my boy turned 5 over the summer and started school. So that's a whole new adventure. School, gosh, I mean, it's kind of amazing, but it does feel a little bit like it's set up for like people who have a lot more, I don't know, maybe it's set up for like when both parents didn't have to work. It finishes at 3 p.m. in the afternoon. Some of you are like, yeah, I know. But gosh, that comes around quick, doesn't it? When you're trying to like have jobs and stuff. Anyway, that's a new thing to navigate, but he's doing pretty good there. I don't think I'll bore you with any other details of my life, but there is lots of stuff to talk about this year on the podcast. Hopefully some interesting conversations, some interviews that will be coming, some stuff I'm interested in talking through around, I think, the possibility of what spirituality and theology and faith could look like for some of us as we also journey through maybe processing religious trauma and or some kind of process of deconstruction, which I know resonates for many of you. So stay tuned for some of that convo if it sounds like your vibe. And of course, we'll no doubt be continuing, I'm sure, to talk about and unpack some of the harmful stuff that religious institutions get up to, not just for the sake of it, but because of how it can affect us and how we need to process that. Some of the belief structures and the way they can harmfully impact people's lives, because that stuff does need to get talked about still. And maybe, look, one of the things I'm perhaps not surprised by and still kind of saddened by at the same time is that by and large, I don't know that these last few years, especially maybe last, is it 2 years of uncovering and speaking out about church abuses and about religious trauma, about narcissistic leaders and institutions, I don't know that it's really impacted the kinds of organizations and institutions for whom this stuff really needs to be taken seriously by, you know. And like I say, not necessarily surprised by that, but I did feel like maybe there's a missed opportunity there for churches and religious institutions to look seriously and critically at the way they treat people, at the ways in which some of these beliefs and practices are actually harmful to folk, to kind of hear that and to take it seriously. So it seems like people in some sense have tried to just kind of move on from all of that, and maybe they're just glad they never hit the news, and so now it's a good time to move in on some gaps left in the market by the other failing institutions. Or maybe they just see it as some kind of persecution of the church and nothing to really pay attention to because it's coming from the world or from those people or whatever it might be. And I think probably one of the deeper driving factors in institutions not taking any of this stuff too seriously is that I think they know, maybe even some, I don't know if this is conscious or subconscious or maybe a bit of both, they know that their success, their growth, their massiveness, if that's indeed what they are, especially for those bigger institutions, actually relies on some of these beliefs and practices that are being questioned here. And so if they were to allow themselves to actually critically reflect on this, they'd be pulling the rug out from underneath their own success. And I just don't think that's really all that comprehensible to them. So, all of that to say, I actually think the conversation needs to be then kept alive, because there are still people coming out of the back end of these systems who are processing all of that. And so there needs to continue to be space for those people, for those of us who need to navigate that space with some sense of like not being alone and lost in it. And also because I think those conversations need to be kept alive so that those institutions, organizations, communities who do want to pay attention and hear continue to find places where these conversations are unfolding. So that's a couple of things I've been thinking about over the summer. Brings me to today's episode. And look, it's just me today, just sharing my thoughts, giving you my thoughts. And I want to reflect on some of the things I've been thinking about over the break. It bounces out of some of the chats Shane and I had last year around spiritual experience. Shane Meyer-Holt, regular guest on In The Shift. And how we relate as well to our past, right? So we're talking a lot about spiritual experiences, but we were doing so with kind of an eye back to the way in which those things made sense for us in the past, and then how they both worked for us and then stopped working for us. And some of the dysfunction or the troubling or difficult stuff that we've bumped into, and I think many of you as well in sharing your stories have bumped into, and some of that stuff around spiritual experience in the church. And so I mean, thinking about how we kind of relate to our pasts and the institutions maybe we were so intimately and passionately involved with, the things we believed, the ways we engaged and all of that, and then to come out of all of that and then to say, no, that's not me anymore, I don't believe that, or I see how that was harmful to me or to others or both, or maybe I hit crisis and that whole package no longer worked, or whatever the process has been, I want to talk about sort of how do we, or what does it mean, or what might it not mean to make peace with the past. And when I say that phrase, I'm aware that can land in kind of a loaded way. So let me say right from the outset that I don't mean that making peace with the past is some kind of prescription to just move on, to forgive and forget, just to decide we're not going to speak about sort of the harmful practices or anything like that. I want to talk about this idea of making peace with the past in ways that I guess are proving helpful for me, and that don't pretend that everything is fine or was fine or will be fine. That don't just kind of land in some kind of anemic, oh well, kind of place, but that actually allow me to move forward into what I hope is healthy ways of being in the world. So that's what I'm going to talk about today, and it's episode 88 of In The Shift. And look, I'm sure you've all missed this terrible intro music for the past few months, so here we go. Episode 88. Let's get into it. All right, well, here we go. I want to talk about three things today, maybe a fourth, maybe three and a half, and three themes, I guess, that have been present for me as I've been thinking about this process of kind of moving forward into the future, making sense of the past, and how I navigate that journey. And I hope these are kind of helpful to you. And these are not kind of sequential steps. This is not some kind of like systematized, like kind of do this one and then graduate to the next step. They're more like interrelated themes that I find myself constantly weaving together, moving backward and forward between. Sometimes one of them comes to the surface much more than the others, but I'm finding each of these in their own way helpful in the process for myself. And so I want to talk about these three. The first is going to talk about feelings. And then the second, I'm going to talk about systems. And then in the third, I'm going to talk about empathy. So let's see how we go with all of that. So let's start by talking about feelings. How do you feel? This idea of reconciling, I guess, my own religious past, including all of, you know, the difficult stuff and even some of what we now have been able to call trauma, which is I don't think I could have called it trauma a few years ago. I felt like I had too many layers of kind of, I guess, history and understanding and implication and the way I was kind of implicated in a bunch of stuff. And also in my head, a whole lot of the things that I'd heard about that justified people's actions or behaviors or systems and the way in which they functioned. But trauma is a word I have increasingly come to reconcile myself to in terms of some of my own experience, which again, without getting into sort of kind of an unnecessarily kind of comparative thing, I certainly know that as a relatively privileged person in the kind of church institution system that I was in, my experience of trauma was not as severe as what it might have been for many others. But at the same time, I want to be able to hold space for the fact that that's kind of what some of it was. And maybe that word is hard to reconcile with also because at times I was so into what I was doing and I was so passionate about it and I was so like all about it. And I was the one kind of trying to convince other people of how awesome it was. And so there's something that feels almost like I don't deserve to name it as trauma. And yet have come to accept that term to describe some of my own experience of it. So if you haven't listened to In the Shift before, then there's a bunch of, if you want to get an insight into some of my trauma, there's obviously a bunch of episodes that we've done, especially in the last couple of years, around the experiences of kind of more toxic or harmful church institutions and the way in which they function and some of my experiences in that. And so as I think about like holding, what I'm interested in here is how do we hold space for our experience and for the feelings that continue to arise, emerge, make themselves known post, as we kind of come out of the experience of that. Because for me now, like if I look back to my experiences in particular of really harmful versions or institutional experiences, you know, that's now quite some time. It's more than a decade in the past, decade and a half in the past. And yet still, there's plenty of felt sense, right? There's still plenty of emotion in the body around some of this kind of stuff. And so as I think about kind of reconciling with or making peace with my own past, I'm not wanting to do so in a way that kind of moves beyond feeling. And maybe a few years ago, I felt like this was what I needed to do, that I needed to get to some kind of place where I would no longer feel anything about any of that, because that would show that maybe I'd moved on. Maybe that I had transcended those experiences, or maybe that I had become mature and so I wasn't holding on to bitterness and anger and I wasn't one of the people that they sort of told me I would become if I left. Or, you know, there are all sorts of intersecting reasons for why I felt like maybe getting to a point where I didn't feel anything about any of that would be like, that's the aspiration, the ideal scenario. Now I think I've come to peace within myself about the fact that I am going to continue to feel things about all of this. This has been a significant part of my own journey and my own story, especially in what for me were very formative years of my identity and my personhood. And so I want to be able to hold space and accept whatever feelings, emotions, sensations come up with all of this kind of conversation of processing through past religious experience. You know, those feelings, if they are there, if they are present, need to be heard, need to be acknowledged. I need to let them say what they need to say to me about what's still sitting underneath the surface. And, you know, there can be a range of those. Sometimes that might still be anger. And I think the narrative in my head for quite some time was that initially when I moved away, you know, and if you've been listening to In the Shift for a while, you'll know I'm still involved within kind of faith spaces. But when I moved away, in particular from an institution that had become pretty harmful to me, initially my sense was to be like a really good leaver. And so I was working really hard to have all of the correct attitudes so that all of the things that they might assume about me would turn out not to be correct and that I could show them that, in fact, I was a good person who had left well and all of that kind of stuff. Then sometime later, when I learned that maybe that narrative in itself was a part of the control mechanism of the system, I then allowed anger to come to the surface. And then I kind of started to move through that. And I think the narrative for me internally was, okay, I needed to go through a period of anger and now I can kind of move beyond that. And perhaps what was surprising for me, even as we, a couple of years ago on this pod, especially when Shane joined the conversations and we were talking about kind of some of the megachurch stories that were breaking into the news and some of the abuses within church systems and stuff, especially in our part of the world, I was surprised by the degree to which certain things did cause me to feel very angry again. And I was like, oh, I thought I should have moved beyond those feelings. And I think what I've been kind of reflecting on recently is that actually that kind of narrative that I should have moved on or I shouldn't feel that anymore or that kind of stuff has actually not been particularly helpful for me. In fact, if I'm still feeling angry about stuff, maybe there's a really good reason. Maybe there is some stuff you should still feel angry about. Not just about, you know, my own experience. Sometimes I feel angry about when I hear other people's stories and the many hundreds, probably thousands of stories I've heard in the last couple of years in particular. You know, that some of that stuff should stir anger. Injustice and harm should at times still make us angry, right? And so that doesn't mean I necessarily live constantly in this place of total rage. If you know me, that's probably not how you'd describe me. I just bury it down deep. No, but I am learning slowly what it looks like to just, when that sensation, when those feelings of anger arise, maybe prompted by hearing a particular story or reflecting back on some of my own experiences, or something happens that gives me a memory, or I have a dream again of a particular kind of experience from the past, let that anger come to the surface and just let me know, yeah, that wasn't okay, was it? And no, I should feel angry. It's okay to feel angry about that. And just letting me know that, in fact, that's my body's way of kind of trying to protect me from harm. And so that's kind of like a good thing. So holding space and creating space for the things that I feel in this journey is one of the ways in which I'm actually, I feel like learning what it is to like move forward with a healthy relationship with the past, because the past is kind of still with me. Maybe it's sadness, you know, for some of us. And sometimes I'm more likely to feel anger. Sometimes I'm more likely to feel sadness. Sadness maybe that comes with the fact that this kind of stuff still happens. Or maybe it's sadness that comes with still the loss of kind of long-term community and what that meant for my life. Another kind of, you know, as I kind of hit my sort of early 30s and suddenly community was kind of undone for me. And what does that mean? And there's like this sadness that comes with that kind of loss, with that loss of belonging. Sometimes there's sadness that comes just with the fact that I don't live with the kind of certainty I used to. And now the sadness doesn't mean I wish I could go back. The sadness just means that I recognize the loss, or I recognize the way, in this example, the way that certainty used to function for me, like the kind of rush, the sense of sureness in the world that my certainty gave me that I now don't have in the same way. And sometimes it's okay to just feel a bit sad about that. It doesn't mean I want to go back and undo the change. It just means all change contains some kind of loss that needs to be grieved. Maybe for some of us, it's joy or relief that comes up. And maybe you're just glad to be rid of a bunch of stuff. Maybe you're like, yes, I am so glad to be on the other side of that. Or I'm really happy I got to let that go, whether that's like an institution or whether that's maybe a belief system that you no longer want to hold on to. And you're just like, again, these feelings are like worth feeling. They're important to create and hold space for, to give a seat at the table. Maybe it's even like sometimes feelings of confusion because you're like, now I don't know what to believe, or I don't know what I believe or what I don't believe, and I don't know what to tell people when they ask me what I believe, and you're not sure what to do with that sort of combination of feelings. Again, that in itself is like okay to inhabit and just be like, yeah, it makes sense that I would feel that way given the journey that I'm on. And maybe I can just, I don't have to answer all of those questions. I don't even have to say whether I want to feel that way or don't. Just I can acknowledge the sense that that's kind of what I'm sitting with some of the time. Doesn't mean you're always feeling that, but maybe sometimes. So like, those are just, I guess, a few examples in a way of the kinds of things that come to the surface for me at times, or I know have certainly come to the surface for others as I've been in conversation and dialogue with a bunch of people. And so what I'm finding helpful is just creating and holding some space for all of that as it comes and as it goes. Sometimes there's more of some and less of others, but being able to listen to like my own experience, to pay attention to what's going on for me. Sometimes I think I'm all good and then I bump into a person or a relationship or a story that's still entangled in some of those historic complications for me, and feelings come up for me there that tell me, oh, okay, I'm still, those things are still woven through me, and that's okay. And there's space and room for that rather than like, oh, I thought I was past this or whatever it might be. So making peace with the past, in this sense for me, is not about transcending all of those feelings and getting to a place of no longer feeling anything, but actually accepting them and listening to what they're telling me. So that's the first of my three themes, is holding space for what I feel. The second is to identify or to be able to name or perceive the systemic issues that are at play so often in so much of what we see in the world, and certainly what we see in some of our religious stories, some of our stories of religious organizations and communities and beliefs and practices. This kind of invitation toward the systemic, I think, is really important for a few different reasons. One is, I think it helps us to move beyond just an individual or a person or a collection of persons who may have said or done particular things. Now, that's not to say that we don't have to pay attention to those particular relationships or what people said and did, right? Not at all. But it is to recognize that there are these wider systems that are at play that are creating environments in which the kind of, if we have experienced kind of negative stuff, if we've experienced harm or mistreatment or abuse or trauma, or simply just beliefs that were like, man, that really, I can see how that was pretty harmful to me actually. That there are systems that create the environment in which those things come to the surface, flourish, are amplified or allowed or tolerated or even celebrated. Now, acknowledging the systemic stuff means a few things. It actually, in a sense, it helps us to recognize that often what we're dealing with here is not the behavior of one particular leader, for example, but actually the systemic tells us that we should pay attention to all of the places in which we see that same kind of systemic stuff present, right? So if we've had a leader who has been narcissistic, who has been abusive towards their subordinates or those below them or their interns or their staff or other people within the community, if they've elevated their own status in ways that are deeply unhealthy and all of that kind of stuff, we can look at that person and say, they're a bad person. But we can also look at the system and say, what is it in the system that has allowed that person to rise to the top of that system, if you like, or that community? What is it in the system that has actually celebrated those harmful aspects of their approach, their way of leading or of being, right? Because what we'll find, I think, is that the system itself, let's say, all of the different things we've talked about on the podcast over the last couple of years, where there are features of the system that are designed to push for growth at all costs, and the cost is often people. And so there are really sort of toxic, harmful ways of leading that will nevertheless create significant growth. In fact, some of the ways of leading that create the most growth are also the most harmful. And if growth is your kind of, if growth is the primary metric in the system, or one of the primary metrics in the system, then that's going to overlook harmful behavior if that behavior is leading to growth for the organization. Now, the reason that kind of insight is important is because we've also heard so many stories over the last couple of years of people leaving one harmful institution and ending up in another really harmful institution, as bad, if not worse, than the one that they left. And sometimes I think that happens for us because we go, oh, okay, that one leader was not good. That one leader was toxic. And so we've just moved on to the next one and gone, surely this leader sounds like they're much better. But if we can pay attention to the systemic, then maybe we can look at the system and go, okay, am I somewhere where that same kind of system is playing out? And if so, it's likely to lead to the same kind of behavior. And this is not just a size thing. This sometimes happens when, you get a kind of an offshoot or a church plant that comes out of a really toxic system. And everyone's like, oh, okay, well, these new people who are starting this offshoot thing, they seem super down to earth and like it's much better. But just look, take some time to examine the system, the systemic stuff, and go, what values are driving this really? Is my voice able to be heard here? What happens if I question or critique? You know, like all of that kind of stuff. So this is thinking through the systemic. It also, so that's one thing it helps us to do. It helps us to see the fact that, okay, it's not necessarily just this one person. Actually, the system stuff itself has allowed that person to emerge and to flourish and to be celebrated and to be elevated. And that same systemic stuff might be also present in other organizations and institutions that are trying to do the same kind of thing. I think this is acknowledging the systemic also helps us to see the ways in which we have been entangled in those systems. And so that helps us to understand why we ended up believing or behaving in the ways that we did, and also maybe gives us some understanding for why others did too. So there's a sense of kind of understanding that comes from that when I'm able to say, okay, well, it's no wonder I kind of believed that. I was immersed in this system that promoted that from every kind of angle with really compelling reasons or kind of rationales for those things. And so that helps me to make some sense of my own past and my own story. Then the other thing I think that paying attention to the systemic stuff can do is actually help us to think about the fact that even beyond religious institutions, that same kind of systemic stuff is playing out and it's kind of interwoven. If we think about maybe patriarchy and the role that that has played within the church, but also the role that plays within our wider society, or similarly with colonization and the way in which that portrays itself in the church, but also the way in which that stuff is present within wider society. And so we can start to see, if we pay attention to the systemic stuff, that actually just leaving a church behind doesn't automatically make us kind of enlightened or transcending all of that bad, you know, all of that bad stuff, quote unquote, because actually we might still be participating in systems that are grounded in all of that and kind of wider community and wider society. And so, and maybe this is especially for those of us with a bit more privilege who have experienced some kind of religious trauma in those systems, it's an invitation to consider actually what it might be like to be bearing the brunt of that systemic stuff, not just in the church, but also in wider society, and how we can then go, okay, well, okay, I might have extricated myself from this harmful system, but I'm also in these wider systems that demonstrate the same kind of stuff, maybe without all the spiritual language or the spiritual baggage or the kind of God-implied stuff, but still the same kind of stuff that needs to be addressed, talked through, unpacked, and unraveled so that we can keep finding healthier ways of being in community with one another in the world. So that's kind of the sense that I have around paying attention to the systemic stuff helps us to kind of move beyond it just being about particular individuals to seeing the wider context that is giving rise to the kind of harm that we see. And that helps us to see it both in the church and also beyond the church. So first thing is, I guess, holding space for what we feel. The second thing, and kind of making sense of and making peace with the past, reconciling and finding some ways to move forward, is to be able to go, what's the systemic stuff that's going on here? And I think in many respects, this is a big part of what we've been trying to do within the shift, is to highlight that systemic stuff so that we can see, oh, okay, it wasn't just like one bad apple. There's actually a whole system that has cultivated this toxicity, and this is the stuff that we really need to do better with. And then the third thing, as I mentioned up front, is this idea of cultivating empathy. And maybe this flows out of the other two in some sense, because as we tune into our own feeling, again, this is not to say it's like a three-step system, but it's certainly connected to the others. As we hold space for our own feelings, maybe we also come to recognize the feelings and the experiences of others. And as we pay attention to the systemic, maybe we're able to get some more context and understanding for our own actions and for the actions of those around us. And so, you know, maybe the hope is that without letting go of maybe some of the anger that we feel, maybe some of the stuff that needs to be addressed and spoken out about, we're also able to move toward a sense of empathy. You know, I think about some of the stuff that I see people believe or say or do within religious spaces that I'm kind of outraged by and think, how could they possibly do or say or think that? And then I think about how I used to do or say or think that. And then I'm like, oh yeah, it wasn't really so long ago, was it? And this is not in any way to say that stuff shouldn't be named, spoken about, addressed, tackled, unpacked, or challenged that there shouldn't be real anger or whatever about that stuff. But also recognizing the system stuff, recognizing the experience stuff means I'm able to approach the conversation maybe with a bit more empathy for myself and my own past and be like, okay, yeah, I did used to believe and say that, didn't I? And there are really understandable reasons for that, but also it's not okay. And maybe to be able to hold that same kind of thing in relationship to some others. And so I think this also helps, you know, as we were talking about last year, we were talking about on the podcast spiritual experience and unpacking why certain frameworks for spiritual experience had become really dysfunctional for us. Certainly that was some of my story, things that I was so sort of, that was so identity forming for me around the way in which I understood how God was to be experienced and what I needed to do and the never-ending cycles of needing breakthrough and getting more desperate and hungry for God and how that was like in some sense the kind of engine of my faith journey because it was always motivating me to push harder but then in the longer term became really unsustainable. So as I was kind of pulling all of that apart, there is a tendency to look back at that form of spirituality and kind, with a kind of scathing judgment of it. And I think what came up in our conversation, especially in some of the later ones we had around that, was that also, like, that's my experience of it. And that might be your experience of it too. But it's clear that also that kind of stuff does function for people. Like, all of our beliefs function for us. They're all doing something for us. And a part of cultivating empathy for ourselves and for others is paying attention to what that belief is doing for us and recognizing that there are all sorts of different reasons why people believe the things that they do, and what is harmful for some is not necessarily harmful for others. What is traumatic for some is not necessarily traumatic for others, and that I can kind of cultivate a sense of empathy for all of that. And that doesn't mean not standing against injustice or harmful beliefs and practices, but it does mean kind of developing a depth of understanding and empathy that is just a part of the journey for me, right? So there are these three things: holding space for what I feel, acknowledging and naming and understanding the systemic, and then a cultivation of empathy. And what this means for me, I think, is a kind of relationship with my past that is not some kind of anemic, for want of a better word, kind of whitewashing of what has gone on and saying, I'm just moved on now and it's all good. I'm not saying that at all, actually. It's not all good. There's some deeply harmful stuff in here that we need to keep talking about that needs to be named. Space needs to be created for people to be able to reckon with that, and those things need to be challenged, and injustices need to be confronted, and harm and abusive practices need to be dismantled and challenged, right? And all of that is true, and I also, for myself anyway, don't want my entire life to be defined by what has gone on before. I don't want to live my whole life kind of enmeshed within that, but to find some good sense of kind of freedom in life as I move forward. And so I guess what I want to finish with, I suppose, is my, and maybe this is something we're going to talk about on the pod at some stage, is the sense of an aspiration I have, I suppose, that all of this would help move us toward authenticity, toward authentic sense of self in the world. As we, you know, unpick some of the systemic stuff, maybe we're able to go, oh, okay, I can see why it has been so hard for me to get a sense of my own intuition or my own thoughts or beliefs or desires or whatever, because the system has functioned in a way to kind of stop me from accessing that part of myself. Maybe there's a lot of social pressure, spiritual pressure, spiritual social pressure to believe certain things, to say certain things and to not say certain things. And so my aspiration is to continue moving forward to like taking up space in the world, you know, authentically. And that doesn't have to be kind of some kind of antagonistic thing. It might be for some of us for really valid reasons, but it doesn't have to be. It can be from just a sense of, okay, what does my authentic self look like in the world? And that's a challenging thing. That's a challenging thing, especially in relationship. How can I take up space, maybe with the things that I now believe and think? How can I hold that? How can I hold room for that? How can I, in those relationships where people still expect me to say and think these things, actually hold my space and be like, this is what I think about that? Or to feel comfortable saying, I don't know what I think about that. I don't know what I believe about that. Just whatever it might be, whatever it might look like, this is what I feel, you know, to be able to move toward the sense of authenticity in the world. I think that's something that I hope for all of us, that we would discover that. And the places where, and within us, where that authenticity has been robbed from us or has been sort of squashed out of us, that we would learn what it is to come into that place. And I hope that these three things that I've been talking about, certainly in my life, I think are helping me to do that. As I make room for what I really feel, as I continue to think about the larger systemic stuff that's going on, and as I cultivate empathy, I'm actually learning then, still on the journey of, but learning how to kind of be authentically myself in the world. So there we go. First in the shift back for this year. There's my thoughts. We're going to move forward into the year with some good chat, some themes that we're going to be exploring, some great conversations we're going to bring, and I'm so happy to be back. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time.